act on. I'm trying to find something to go with.
No, The Expendables is Sylvester Stallone. Inception is the new Chris Nolan. It's sort of a dreamscape.
The one
Leo DiCaprio. Yeah, it should be pretty good. Anyway, so
It is a really cool idea.
Yeah, it'll be cool. We'll see. I'm hoping. There's a lot of high hopes for that one.
There's so many, especially architecture-wise, but there are so many amazing things. It's been a while since I've had one of those dreams, but just incredible cityscapes, and if I could just put it into art somehow, it's just incredible sometimes.
Yeah, that's what I think they're going to do with it. It looks like it has a pretty cool aesthetic, kind of a dark city, kind of a...
Man, I haven't seen that.
Noirish aesthetic, but I don't know. I'm being cautiously optimistic. I think it will be fun to look at. I just don't know if the plot will be there, but it could be. It probably will. Nolan hasn't made a bad movie yet, in my opinion. I mean, Following was good. Memento was pretty darn good. Insomnia was a remake of a movie, but it was still pretty good.
I didn't see that.
And then Batman Return Begins. I like Batman Begins a pretty decent bit. And then
I do too.
Even Prestige I enjoyed, though I wanted more gadgets. I wanted more stuff from Prestige. And of course Dark Knight, which is good. So yeah, that's Nolan for you. But tonight we're talking about a guy that works with Nolan in every movie, pretty much since Batman. He's in Inception also.
Oh, no shit.
Michael Caine is in Inception also. He was in Prestige and... both the Batman films. So yeah, we're talking about Harry Brown, otherwise known to some that might see the ads and think that it's Death Wish 3 or something, but British Death Wish 3. And it's not. It's more... you think our audience loves that sound? They want to hear that?
They should listen to my chair.
Yeah, there was an alien being born on the podcast today. It sprung forth from a dead woman's stomach. Just like in Harry... No, that didn't happen in Harry Brown.
Fairly graphic.
It was a decent bit graphic. It was a lot of digi stuff, especially that last shootout was pretty digital and looked kind of bad or weird. I don't know. No worse than like the stuff from like Rambo, you know? Rambo had a lot of digital
blood.
No, the digital blood in the new Rambo movie.
Yeah, digital blood.
Or Ninja Assassin
stuff.
That
was the purple blood just got you.
Yeah, it did. It was like, what? I don't know, did we say, hey, we're the Feudal Podcast, it's Ian, we got Mark.
Yo.
Hey, yo, we're the Futile Podcast, doing our Futile Podcast thing, so search us and have fun with that. Send us an email or whatever. Anyway,
mock what you don't understand.
Yeah.
And piss on it.
That's exactly. That's what the children they're doing
like
in this
Noah.
Movie. Like Noel.
Noel? Okay.
Wasn't Noel. His name Noel? Was it Noah?
Yeah, it was Noel.
Yeah.
Cool.
So really, premise for Harry Brown is pretty simple. You got an old guy played by Michael Caine who's on the tail end, about to be a widower, so he pretty much is a widower. And then he lives in the estates, which I guess is sort of the equivalent of the projects or something, pretty much.
Pretty much.
And he's a
pensioner.
He's a pensioner.
He lost his daughter.
His daughter was killed. Yeah, or yeah,
we
somehow we don't know
to
what happened to her.
Other than she died when she was 13,
yeah.
Which is not a good sign.
No, and there's some punk kids just running around causing mischief and strife. Started trouble in his neighborhood. So he got into one little fight, but his mama was already dead, so she couldn't send him into L.A. or anything. How you doing, Seth?
You think him and Noel?
Seth would be right there with Noel. Michael Caine would have to take him out.
That's for all your listeners right there.
You wouldn't strangle the poor police lady, would you?
Of course not.
Okay.
Strangler. You know what I'm saying?
No, it'd be more like the dude in the car.
This is anonymous, right?
Yeah. It would be more like the dude in the car.
What do you guys just watch?
Harry Brown, Michael Caine, beating up punker kids and stuff, shooting them.
Check it out, Mark.
Gonna end up with tendonitis.
Yeah, his whole wrist is probably gonna hurt really bad tomorrow.
It's gonna be like that scene in The Fly. God, that freaked me out.
Yeah, that arm wrestling on the fly? The
arm wrestling, yeah.
Anyway, so we're back to Harry Brown.
Your hands are kind of sweaty.
Clammy, more like, probably. Yeah.
Been putting it up your ass crack again, haven't you?
Trying to stay warm. That's the excuse you use, right?
Cold-blooded.
So, I don't know. Yeah, I would say that it's...
I wouldn't.
Well, you didn't see it,
I did see it. I saw it in my mind's eye.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And, you know, to anybody out there that cares, this is Seth.
Did friends become enemies?
Not really.
Did enemies become friends?
Nope.
Not really.
Enemies stayed enemies, and they got dispatched.
Was everybody better in the end? Everything worked
out? No, nothing really changed. Like Mark said, the point of the movie was kind of just like, stuff goes down.
It's realistic. If the stuff goes down...
And sometimes you just have to take care of it.
The problem with the main problem...
Mark, have you ever read Tom Clancy's Dead of Honor?
No.
Speaking of Vigilating Justice...
I think I have that book. I tried to read one of his books when I was like 12 or 13, and it was too much for me then. It's just too damn boring, so I never went back, but he's funnier and shit to listen to if you ever get a chance.
Harry Joe Brown.
It's really not a whole lot to say. I mean, there's a lot of issues relating. Yep.
Yep. Well, similar to Gran Torino, I think, and it's got it's the whole idea of, and I wanted to talk about this.
Yep.
The ending's so much different, though.
It's different, but...
And there's no racial... tension at all either.
Yeah, I mean, I know, but if someone were gonna look at it from the ads and be like, oh, it's Death Wish, you'd be like, no, it's more like Gran Torino. But back to Harry Brown, I wanted to just mention one last thing.
It's
here.
It's bad for the emotions, though.
About, we're trying to do a podcast.
No, we're done.
Done? Do you have some strawberries?
Well, what are we doing, Seth, then?
Sci-fi Channel Awards movie Yeti.
The Yeti?
Yeah, remember you turned it off, you got bored with it, turned it off.
Was that the one with Lance Henriksen?
No, that's abominable.
Oh, I don't know.
That one was getting lame, but the dude from Yeti
is steps above abominable, right, Ian?
How could it be without Lance Henriksen?
Ian.
Well, he gets wasted pretty early on.
Much more Yeti than there was Yeti in Abominable.
Was Yeti the one where they're like crashed?
They're crashing and start eating each other like before they even crash. Like, we need to resort to cannibalism because we might crash.
That's cool.
No, they catch a rabbit. They do this whole thing where they catch a rabbit, like, to show that it's possible to find food.
And then they can't figure out their fractions.
And then yeah, they're like, there's seven of us, so we each get one leg. Because there are four legs in a seven-legged rabbit, yeah. I don't even know. It was ridiculous.
Did they rip that guy's arms off? Or we missed
now, the best is when it stepped on that chick's head.
That was good.
So you saw Yeti?
I saw, like, the last half.
The good half.
And I kept waiting. Did the one asshole that shot the guy in the face, did he get it? Because he really needed it.
Yeah, Raven.
That was Raven?
Yeah, it was Raven.
Raven.
Did he get it?
I don't remember. You turned it off before that.
I was tired.
He was doing his crazy sci-fi jumps where he jumped like 40 feet and high and then he took the girl.
It was weird. It's like he was a grasshopper.
Yeah, exactly.
No.
Nope.
No.
I give it a no, too. No to Yeti.
But I want to know what happened to the
Abominable.
I turned it off like halfway.
Abominable?
It's like, it was so lame, the one chick,
Lance Henderson,
she just disappears.
Lance Henderson actually dies really early in that movie.
Yep.
Yeah, so, and then he just stalks, like, some chicks, and there's a guy in a wheelchair that lives in a house next to him.
Right, with the, like, an RN or something that's, like, keeps calling him he's crazy.
Right, but he's seeing him through the thing.
So it's like a play on...
He tries to rescue
the
girls.
Window or something.
Yeah, Rear Window.
Yeah, he tries to rescue
them. They all do that. If you really watch... them, they've all got like
but
some.
Where's the old sheriff?
They didn't do that one. But I mean, like, we talked about how the archetype of Jaws has been co-opted by zillions of the sci-fi movies. But then Rear Window for Abominable or Alive for Yeti. It's in there now. And it's almost more annoying because then they waste a lot of time on the plotting. Like you said, it gets boring.
Alive and Rear Window.
No, it gets boring. It's like you're not watching a sci-fi movie to see like some attempt at a bad plot.
To see a guy in a suit.
Yeah, getting ripping people's arms off. Or bad, terrible, terrible, terrible CG.
Yeah, he did good like dialogue. Punch through that and one dude.
Hilarious dialogue, exactly.
Which was a ripoff from Fred 13.
Remember that one guy's name was Peyton Elwood?
I think that was the first time somebody got punched through.
And there was a guy named Raven. Actually, the first time somebody got... Well, okay, I don't know if it was
maybe
through.
Maybe like some
Terminator.
Some, like, Kung Fu movies.
Bill Paxton was like Laundry Day Right, and then Arnold just give it to him. But that might not have been a through. That might have just been an in.
No, yeah, I don't think it was through, but it was an in.
Yeah, definitely it was an in.
Should have just done his laundry, I guess.
He should have, yeah.
Shit.
Bill Paxton. Coconut Pete?
Coconut Pete, yeah, straight up.
What time was...
Apparently I'm not wanted here, I guess.
Hey!
Hey.
We're talking about some Harry Brown.
We could talk about some Harry Winkler.
I thought you were done with Harry Brown.
No, you seemed to think we were, so we decided to, what is it?
Forgo? Parlay?
Sure.
Parkour?
Yeah, we do a little jumping around. Like those, guys from, Punisher Warzone.
Let's talk about Punisher Warzone a little bit. Have you seen Punisher Warzone?
Pretty solid.
Pretty one of the most...
Is that a show?
It's like the best movie ever
made. It's a movie. It's got Jimmy McNulty in it.
It's got a guy jumping around between buildings.
No shit.
Don't spoil it. That's the best
McNulty?
Part. You don't spoil
Ian,
it. You don't
Ian,
spoil Mark. That. You don't Mark. Spoil that.
It's a guy jumping
You don't spoil that.
It, like no, a boss no, guy. No. And he's all like, hey, man, he's jumping between buildings often. And then no. Punisher takes a bazooka and then blows him up in the air. And he disintegrates. Then he has a one-liner, too, doesn't he, after that?
I don't think that there was a
one-liner. You gotta have a one-liner.
One-liner is not necessary after something that cool.
Nope. That was the end of him.
And then he shoots people, too.
That was like the end of Kick-Ass, was the rocket launcher and the one-liner, which
that
was
crazy.
Awesome. Yeah, throwback. Gotta keep the standards.
Was that the Rage Cage that did that?
Yes.
No, Rage Cage isn't. Long before that. So, and that was kind of the coolest thing about the whole movie is you got this guy, the main character, I can't even remember his name now, the guy that's banging the 43-year-old or whatever.
You mean in real life the actor is banging some old chick?
Yeah, he's like 19. She's 7 months pregnant with this kid.
That's disgusting.
Well, they're in love, you know how it is.
No, that kid's gonna have Down syndrome if he's really that old.
Yeah, he's a mixed up kid, but yeah, whatever. And, what the hell is that guy's name? It's the first thing I'd seen him in, I guess he's...
He's playing John Lennon.
Yeah, there was that. Well, apparently that's where he met the chick. But, found all that out after the fact when I was reading about it on IMDb. Because a whole bunch of, like, teenage chicks that thought he was God were all pissed off about it.
He'll be back on the market once the kid self-aborts or whatever.
But now he plays this nerdy kid, and he has this accident, so he becomes somewhat...
He can't feel pain anymore.
Right. And yeah. I'm not familiar with the graphic novel or comic book.
Mark Miller.
And he tries his best, and it's an interesting idea. It's like, you know, why not become a superhero? And he's trying to help people out, but he's really bad at it. And he just keeps getting his ass beat. And... He really just keeps wimping out. Well, not so much that he wimps out, it's just not a whole lot he can do. But at the end of the movie, he saves the day and redeems himself, which was nice.
A little cathartic. Similar, it's a whole vigilante thing. Like, we were going to talk to, we can get back to Harry Brown now. It relates to Kick-Ass. I mean, essentially, it's a vigilante thing.
Yeah, and actually, they are related in a lot of ways, huh?
I mean, it's just how you portray it and the tone. That was the problem. I haven't seen Kick-Ass. I've listened to a few podcasts about it. And I mean, just in the trailer, it looks to me like reconciling the tone of the...
The trailer had threw me through a loop because the movie is nothing like the trailer.
Yeah, well, it seems to me like it's a difficult situation where it's like you want to kind of parody and you want to kind of realistically portray this sort of thing, but then you, in the end, fall to all the tropes where you get a little girl that can do quadruple backflips and beat up guys that are 4 times her weight and height, and it just seems completely unrealistic. And it's like, is this a parody?
But it's not completely unrealistic because you can... I mean, think about gymnastics, for instance. You could create a child killer like that.
Oh,
and not
maybe.
Only is she just beating people up, that only goes so far. She stabs him, she blows him away, she uses explosives.
Yeah, yeah.
She uses the whole... It's, it, I mean, it's like she's freaking special forces.
Okay, so who knows? I can't.
They have this jetpack, which is awesome, and they mount miniguns on it. I'm like, that thing is so awesome.
Okay.
Just flying around on this jetpack with these fucking, you know, Gatling guns.
Pretty crazy, yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty crazy.
None of that Michael Brown. He just has his couple of weapons.
Miniguns are just always...
They're always good for a laugh.
They're always good. I mean, you got the Terminator. You got Jesse Ventura.
Mm-hmm.
And you got the...
You got Carl Weathers trying to weaken the door in Assault on Devil's Island, TNT original movie.
He had a minigun.
Hulk Hogan. Yeah, he did in that part of that movie. He's like, step back, I gotta weaken the door, because all the gymnast kids were taken. And it, like in the real world, where gymnast kids can't, like, do all that stuff. And he's like, step back, I gotta weaken the door. So he lays into the door, which is like a 300-year-old door or whatever, with the minigun.
Well, it's probably only a 308.
Yeah, it was. Who knows? It was pretty crazy.
It was like 4,000 rounds a minute, though.
Mm. But one concept...
Which they actually had to tune down in Terminator 2.
Oh, my gosh.
Because they used a real minigun. And it was funny because when, I guess, the owner that they had borrowed it from, like, practically had a heart attack. You know, something like that cost fucking fortune. And, Arnold drops it at the end. He really dropped it.
Yeah.
And but now they had to tune it back because it shoots so fast. It creates... Well, they did it for real. The sound was, like, for real in Predator.
Mm-hmm.
And it just has that really... It's more of a buzzing sound because you can't hear the shots because they're so close together.
Mm-hmm.
So they tuned it back. I like miniguns. Harry Brown didn't have that kind of firepower. He had he has a Glock, which he never used.
He has a SIG, which he dropped in the river.
Yeah, he dropped the SIG. I want a SIG 22. I have a SIG 225.
Uh-huh.
I don't have a SIG 226. The 225 is a smaller... Actually, it's a smaller version of the 220, which was the original... Or the 226 came out later because it was a high-capacity firearm.
Oh, wow.
Where it had double stack magazines. So, yeah, that gun would hold 15, 16 rounds.
It did seem like there was a lot of, like, firing without reloading and that.
Oh, yeah, you got 16 rounds.
Then that's plenty.
Yeah.
So
the Glock would have been high capacity, too.
So the gunplay was pretty realistic, you think, in this movie?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then he had the Smith & Wesson Mall 36, which is what it originally called the Chief Special. Little, you know, detective. The cool thing, the one drawback to that gun, though, was that it was 5 shots.
Yeah, that's what the crazy kid that he was selling it to him even said. It's only 5 shots, but each one will put a kick, you know?
Yeah, 38's a really wussy round. I had a little snub-nosed 38, I don't know if you remember it.
Mm.
And I really didn't like it. You couldn't hit shit with it.
Because it was just so squirrely.
Well, I had a Taurus. I didn't have a Smith & Wesson. It was the only Taurus I ever owned, and it was a piece of shit.
Mm-hmm.
So I sold it. But I bought it for like $160, and I sold it for $275.
Not too bad. Not too bad.
Yeah, so... But I definitely recommend a Smith over a Taurus.
Okay.
But the competition, the Colt Detective Special... had a 6 round, so I was thought
that that's the way to go.
Yeah, the traditional, more traditional revolver. But that's all kind of beside the point. But what was that actress's name? I keep
forgetting. Emily Mortimer, that looks like your doctor.
Emily Mortimer, yeah. She. Well, it was kind of disturbing, her getting, you know, strangled and beat up. And
yeah, yeah. That's the thing. I mean, it's
but
really.
She's a honey.
To really get back to the. But she's a good actress, too. She's been in...
She's always been totally conveyed. I didn't really know what they were doing with her character, either, because she's straight and narrow. She thinks outside the box. But there is a certain amount of, you know, the straight and narrow, it's like, so you're going to... Going after this whole... Well, this is a tricky thing, because the guy broke the law, vigilantes.
She never seemed all that determined. She just was trying to get to the bottom of things, I think, really. Because if you, here's what I think about it. their interaction is so little that you know, just because he appears to be an old, seemingly innocent guy, as a police officer, she doesn't know him from anything. So he could be, like, you know, the next big guy moving in. You never know, well, even though he's an old man and
well,
stuff.
Well, she looked up his record, apparently.
That's true, yeah, she knew that at least, but she doesn't know. Maybe he's a he's cornered on the crime.
Brought in the Northern Ireland thing.
Yeah. A little bit. I mean, that's the thing.
Civil War is just terrible.
As a chief sort of criticism of this movie, I would say, is that it's just, it introduces a lot of elements, and then there's not a lot of payoff to them. Now, that can also be an element to the theme, which is that, like, yeah, you're right. No one knows what's really going on, and things happen, and they're not really better for it, but they kind of are. You know, crime rate's down 30% at the end, and maybe what he did mattered, but... I mean, he can walk through the tunnel now, you know, but will he be able to in another 6 months, you know?
It's a lot of those questions that don't have answers, because the answers are, the solutions are decisions that we can't make.
Sort of, yeah.
It's kind of like the whole idea, you know, it's like you see so many people you just want to, that are having children that shouldn't be, and you just want to have them fixed. But you can't do that. I don't want to live in that world.
Yeah, you don't want to live in that dystopia. And like I said before, I mean, you never know those children of those seemingly...
Yeah, one of those children, it's like, whose decision is it to make? One of those children
could
become something.
The mighty God King soldier
so
when aliens invade.
Everything's
so
ridiculous. Yeah. It's just ridiculous, though. So that's the spirit of the law, is to ruin a productive member of society's life. That makes a lot of
more often
sense.
Than not, because they operate by the law.
I know, and they let,
and it's the whole gun thing, right? It's like Harry Brown has to go break the law to get a weapon to defend himself, to be safe.
Oh, it's you know, it's, again, it's one of those questions that's so ridiculous. And of course, I'm biased, but even though I'm biased, I still see all sides, because you end up with people that are not responsible with firearms, even if they legally buy them, and it's a whole other issue.
Mm-hmm.
The issue I have with it is, by banning ownership, it will save some lives. There'll be accidents that will be averted, but you could say this, it does get kind of scary when society starts dictating what's safe and what isn't.
First they take the guns away, then they start telling you nice things.
Well, it's like we're all going to end up in cars that drive themselves, uh-huh. because we're not responsible enough to drive ourselves. It's about control, taking away control. And even if it is mostly symbolic, because, I mean, realistically, even having a gun for... Well, you know, statistically, that's kind of ridiculous, too, because I remember when I was reading all that stuff, because I was curious about it, one of the last... gun rights issues. It was probably during that whole Heller trial thing in Washington, D.C., and I started looking up a bunch of stuff. The FBI statistics, it's insane. Supposedly, and these are the FBI statistics, like 1.5 million violent crimes are averted every year because of concealed weapons permits. Because a large part of having a gun isn't so much using the force, it's showing the ability to use
the will.
Force.
It's the will.
Well, if you ever draw a gun on somebody, you have to intend to shoot them. Otherwise, don't pull
them. Yeah, exactly. It's the will
to
have the action.
To take that measure, there has to be some sort of life-threatening or... you know, rape or whatever sort of instance. You don't just flash it to scare off some kids, they're mouthing off at you or some shit. And it's kind of a dangerous thing, too, because it's like that thing, it's like, and that's the problem I have with open carry. You know, there's all these protests that have gone on in states, oddly enough, like Wisconsin, for instance, where it's not you can't get a concealed weapons permit, but it is legal, technically, to open carry. So you could carry a gun and a holster on your side that's visible.
Mm-hmm.
But if I was carrying a gun for defense, I wouldn't want anybody to know that I had it.
Yeah.
Because in a way, that makes you a target. And that is the other issue, too. A lot of guns that end up in crime are stolen from law-abiding citizens that own them legally. Because people don't, you know, they leave them in their cars, people just act irresponsibly with them.
Yeah.
Whatever. So it's not a cut and dry... It's not a cut-and-dry issue. I personally, the more rights that are taken away from me, the worse off I feel the country is. There's a certain amount of collateral damage, whether it's fast food, whether it's automobiles. I mean, how many people die every year in automobile crashes because they're acting irresponsibly?
Exactly. But so, you know, you teach the...
I don't want to live in a world where everything is guaranteed, and it never will be, because then
the car drives itself, and the government nudges you away from eating things that are bad for you.
Well, the nanny state's just not the world I want to live in.
And you're right.
I don't like people telling me what I can and can't do, ultimately.
And that's the difference between, like...
I know right and wrong.
The older people and the younger people. I mean, really, like, getting back to it, it's like the younger people are just... They're going to behave in the ways that they do, like, in movies like Harry Brown or in Gran Torino, the punks that are just running around causing trouble.
Well,
you have these older
guys
that...
I think about that. I just couldn't do that.
Yeah.
It's still one. It's like when that cop is being beaten.
Yeah.
It actually emotionally disturbs me to see that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you think, and then it kind of comes back. Yeah, I suppose it is, but I do still get shocked because I know it really happens.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's like RoboCop even. I mean, as ridiculous as RoboCop can seem, that whole sequence at the beginning is very viscerally disturbing.
There's so many sequences that really gets you in your gut. It's like the people like that are animals. Once
you're done with them, yeah.
There really is, you can either lock them up or you can put them down.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like they have rabies. There's a slim chance they might find some kind of redemption. They'll find Jesus, become a Buddhist or whatever. But by and large, you know, the wiring is fried. It's just not going
to
come.
That was the big controversial element to Clockwork Orange, though, in the book, is that does happen. He is this total null guy. There's no rehabilitation at all. He just, like you said, he just grows...
I'm trying to remember the movie. I didn't read the book.
He just grows out of it. And the movie, I think it just like has kind of like sort of an ending.
Well, that's an extreme focus on kids being kids.
Well, Clockwork Orange has them breaking into people's houses and raping them.
But kids, you know, it's seriously what the shit I remember kids doing when I was little. And I shied away from a lot of it. Sometimes because it just didn't feel right, and sometimes scared to get caught.
Oh, yeah.
But there is no idyllic little angels. I mean, seriously, if you let them loose, man, it is Lord of the Flies, but do I feel like...
You don't gotta kill them. So I don't know.
But vigilantism is always a tough topic because you root for them. Because society's not going
to
fix the problem.
You always do to a point, and then they always...
And at some point, it is self-defense. It becomes, do you just wait until it's your time to get mugged and killed?
Exactly. I mean, you're right. It's always levels of extreme. I mean, like something like falling down is a great example of sort of the vigilantism, where then they push it to a certain point where you're almost with it, you're on board. And then at a certain point, he, like, decides to dress in all black and put on the body armor or whatever and go for it. And you're like, okay, now you've gone from just a guy that's trying to get home to a guy that's, like, on some kind of psychotic mission to single-handedly clean. Falling down, Michael Douglas. You know, basically.
Well, that was because he was just such a fucked-up character to begin with. That was a fascinating movie because it was a disturbed guy.
Yeah.
Cracked.
Yeah, but
he
was pushed to that, and yeah,
you know, they kind of portray that.
But that's true of all the vigilantism, though. Is it's always like you could be the villain so much. So he's, even in Harry Brown, Michael Caine talks about how he's kind of had to push down the violent tendencies, you know, and then.
Well, it's because it never leaves you. You kill people that. You are in combat.
Well, in Gran Torino, it's
the
Korean thing. Yeah, exactly.
Well, yeah, once you start killing people like that, it's not like you... It's not the same as somebody... It's kind of like James Gandolfini talking about his first and then second, and then after a while you just do it to see the look on their face from True Romance.
Mm-hmm. Getting back to Harry Brown, I think some of my minor complaints of the film, I mean, are just... You talk about the things that are shocking in it, and... It's so tough to do that and have it play just right and not play like it's just going for shock. And a lot of that stuff feels to me in this movie like it's just really doing that. There's something about the way the world is laid out that lacks an explanation, and so it sort of seems almost absurdist. It's like, really, this little part of England has got some kids. Why
does that have an explanation?
Well, no. I mean, in terms of setting the environment and establishing the world.
If they were going for shocking, there would have been some...
There would have been way more rape or some... Yeah, you know, they kept that to a minimum, I think, to a degree.
Nobody lost any head fingers cut off.
Yeah, they didn't go too far. I mean, they had the woman cop get kicked a few times, and that was pretty disturbing, like you said, but it wasn't too terrible, and, I mean, you know, relatively. So I'd say that it was pretty minimal in terms of that sort of like out of nowhere, just for the sake of shock value. Like it's like the heartstring thing, you know. It's like it's, you know, when it seems like it's just so hokily trying to pull to make you cry. It's like it's trying to make you cringe, but you know, it didn't do that. I agree that you're right that it didn't do that too much in this film. It did feel to me in a few places like it did, only because I felt kind of like. It well for one
it really didn't get all that sentimental. I mean, no, we never found out about
his daughter or anything.
We didn't find out a lot about his past. There were just hints about it.
I would have almost preferred more of that too, a little bit of sentiment.
And there wasn't a lot. He wasn't really preaching.
No, there wasn't. And it sort of almost felt a little incomplete because it lacked some of those elements, or it lacked at least dealing or addressing with some of those elements.
Well, I really wanted the cop to say thank you. I don't know why.
Yeah,
you wanted. It's like he saved your life.
Yeah, I mean, I think the fact that she didn't is almost kind of like a weird reconciliation between the two. The fact, you know, that, you know, he kind of caused the whole riot, if you really think about it. The whole thing came to a head because of his actions. It wasn't like the cops were going to come in there if that those other all those people that got murdered.
It was only a matter of time.
Yeah, well, maybe, but or it would have just stayed at the slow burn. It would have been sort of acceptable enough.
But that's the problem.
Yeah,
is that it's acceptable at all?
Exactly, but that's the sort of thing, right? I'm not saying it's okay that it's acceptable. I'm just saying, like, within the confines of the movie, and that's one thing. I mean, because it's a foreign movie, ostensibly, you know, it's in England, it's in a part of England that's supposed to be kind of run down or whatever. It's tough to judge it compared to something more like, oh, well, this is South Central LA, and this kind of scene is something that, I mean, I can at least verify based on, you know, news reports I followed because it's in my country. It's like I'm not really as aware of what kind of craziness or violence and to what degree it happens in a place like England or something, you know? So it's tough to, for me... It's tough for me to have a full sense of authenticity about that kind of situation, but at the same time, it's perfectly believable, you know? It's like, well, that's believable, but I don't know. It's almost like a made-up world to create this story, but maybe it's a perfectly believable world, and maybe it's very accurate to how certain parts of England are really that, you know, that run down with that degree of sort of...
I'm sure there's parts of England that are more run down.
Crime and misery. Well, yeah, of course, probably. But it's, you know, I'd like to see if it were set like I wonder what Canada would be like, because Canada is of course also got parts that are run down
for sure,
druggies and everything else, exactly, right? But it just seems so against the stereotype, which is good though. You break those things up and you'd be like, oh look, you know, there are crime ridden areas.
I mean, you talk, it's been hammered into our heads since grade school. I mean, think of all the Charles Dickens and
Yeah, but it always had sort of a
weird... Jonathan Swift's. I mean, the idea of the English slums and the Irish and...
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, Michael Caine, Clint Eastwood... I was going to talk about this a little because it's... I think it's now we're in this phase where really...
What movie were they in together?
I don't know if they ever were in a movie together, but they're both really old and they've both had movie star careers for a long time. So I think it's one of the phenomenon of just medical science and everything else has got to the point, and maybe just their genes, that they're a couple of guys that managed to live to be...
Yeah, I don't think they were ever in a movie together.
Yeah, but managed to live to be really old and still do movies. Like, it's rare. Because you think of someone like, I don't know, like Cary Grant or something, who was like a big movie star,
well,
and then
a lot of those guys
died of just, yeah. You know... Yeah, exactly. Or,
I was talking to my dad about
cancers
that.
And whatnot, you know?
Yeah, a lot of the big Hollywood actors that...
So the big Hollywood actors, like Michael Caine, like Clint Eastwood, it's the first time now in this generation... Paul Newman is another one, where it's like you get to sort of see them when they're really young, and then you get to see them when they're middle-aged, and then you get to see them when they're really fucking old. And it's a rare kind of interesting experience, and it gives you the ability to tell these stories about characters that really are coming from a different era and a different perspective, and to see that sort of tale. I mean, you know, people talk about, like, the dad revenge movies, you know, like Taken and stuff, where...
That was a great movie.
Yeah, exactly. But this is, I mean, this Michael Brown, or Harry Brown, I probably called it Michael Brown half the time. Anyway, Harry Brown, and even to a degree, Gran Torino. I know they're not exactly the same. They call him
Dan Brown, though.
Yeah, yeah, no, Dan Brown. Is like a grandpa revenge movie or something. It's kind of crazy like that, you know? It's...
I think everybody wants to... Well, it's really too late, which was nice that he was able to save somebody. There was a redeeming value to the violence.
Yeah.
If you could really call it that.
God, I'd be hard-pressed to give this movie a 3 out of 5. Because it's not really treading new ground.
I'm going to give it 3.5 just for Emily Mortimer.
Okay. I'm going to give it a 2.5 for Michael Caine and for Emily Mortimer and... It just didn't quite give me my fulfillment. You know, it wasn't either ridiculous enough to be fun or, like, thoughtful enough to be a little more than just kind of an unintentional pretentiousness to it when it, like, lays off on some of the otherwise expected sentimentality and whatnot, you know?
Keep it live until the curtain call. Definitely got to show my ethic when there's work involved. The second that I shower skeptics with my dialogue is when the third rock will ignite like a fire log. It burns steadily from night to morn and bring forth enough heat to keep your earthlings warm. Sip a fifth on the sixth day for stress relief and catch it right before you drift in the deep rim sleep. It's the dream merchant, selling everything from lucid nightmares to fantastic flashbacks to classic recollections of wearing a gas mask to fourth period lunch right after math and time for arts and crafts. That good time shit'll make a pessimist laugh. Drop weaponry to make you call the rest of your staff. And at the briefing out, tell them it's a blessing to have the ability to stay sharp and rip you in half. Nah, with thoughts of mass exodus directing us to a place where our own thoughts start collecting us. They got us on the clock, checking us in, accounting for what we make and benefits and dividends. And I stay looking within. So what I write is introspective. It's like I'm RoboCop and killing shit is my direction.
It gets to be acceptable.
Yeah?
Can you talk?
What's up?